I'm James O'Barr, artist, writer of The Crow, and you're watching Drinking with Comics.
How's my hair?
Beautiful.
Hello, and welcome to How's My Hair with Mike Wellman.
I don't have a microphone.
You do. Trust me. You do.
No,
hello. Welcome to Drinking with Comics. I'm Sean. This is Chris. That's Mike. That's Jordan. We've got Kirsten and Ray on cameras, and we've got a live studio audience. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Is this supposed to be warm?
It's room temperature. I just got it.
Ooh, it's a Friday in early March, and Jordan is drinking mead.
Yeah.
Getting ready for Ren Fair.
Which I believe you have drank that on the show before. Am
I have. Your Nordic friend was here when that happened last time. A mead for all seasons. Cold or hot, spiced or not.
My Viking friend, John.
Oh, is he here?
Yeah, Viking.
He was here.
I never remember who comes. You guys have been here
before? He recited Conan, like, verbatim from the audience.
He's drunk at these things.
And you asked him. So, what are you drinking, Mike?
I'm drinking Elysian Space Dust IPA.
So, I didn't know this.
I don't know anything
beer.
About it, but
that beer has two of the three hops that are in Three Floyds. I think it's the Zombie Dust, which is, I don't think we have Three Floyds out here, but in the Midwest, Three Floyds is this like super scarce. Well,
it's got Chinook, Citra, and Amarillo hops.
Okay, I don't know which ones are which.
What are hops? I should know this.
Well, ugly little plant.
This thing?
Yeah.
It's what they use to. So first of all, it's a preservative. So with the IPAs, the more hops, the more it will be preserved. So it's literally India Pale Ale because they add extra hops to preserve it for the boat rides to India from England.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
To India from where?
From England.
Huh.
Yeah. So,
am I the only one that didn't know that?
We've talked about that on this show like every other episode.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. I don't often remember stuff either, so I'm not pointing fingers at you.
And actually, it sounds like that's like the crazy new drug they do up at Dodger Stadium.
Elysian. Space Dust IPA. That's what I bought.
Dude, I was on some Elysian last night. I don't even know what the fuck happened. Oh, wow. Woke up with Chewbacca in the bed.
I'm taking Gerald home tonight. Beat that.
I'll give you a 5-minute warning. You
I need all the beer I can get.
What are you drinking?
I picked up the Carl Strauss, the Red Trolley Ale.
The beer, it's like, it's good. It's not going
it's not bad. I mean, it
wake me up in the middle of the night to open one. But
went over to the liquor store next door, and it was cold.
Do you sometimes wake up in the middle of the night to open beers?
I've been having trouble sleeping, and so what I'll do is I'll just get up and drink, like, two more beers, and hopefully it'll put me down.
Worst case, there's always heroin.
No, that's going to put you up. What are you having, sir?
I went with an old familiar because I've had a stressful 12 days and I needed something familiar, which usually that would be Sierra Nevada is like that's like my chicken soup for the soul. It is. But I've got a 12er that at home.
Like instead of broth, but with beer in it now.
This is,
I don't know.
No. I've had this before, Dr. Jekyll's Beer Belly Kolsch. It's so delicious. It's organic.
Pass that this
that's
way.
That's not a selling point. I don't care if it's organic or not.
It's empty, I think, Jordan.
Wow, well, I'm gonna smell it.
When I open another one, I'll let you taste it.
Yes.
It smells good.
There's a snappiness to it, so I don't know. But it's good. Yeah. So, we actually, it's interesting, a lot of times we do this show and we end up not talking about comics. And, you know, it has a lot to do with this. But a lot of the times it's because we all read different things and then we bring them to the table and nobody's read everything. So last night, Mike had the idea, like, hey, why don't we get together and have dinner at my place, and then we can bring all the comics we're going to talk about, and we can just pass them out and have a reading session. And we did, and it was
fun.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're mostly on the same page, and I'm always up for hearing about new things. So who wants to start? I mean, there's a lot of comics to talk about.
We're going to talk about a lot of comics tonight, so I hope you guys are...
You won't even recognize the show. You'll be like, there's all the comics on this show. Just drinking with comics?
That's right.
The comics with drinking
to bring us back to the dysfunction that we're used to.
And so what are we going to kick it off with?
I do want to do a close your eyes and feel this near the end.
Okay. So I brought stuff to feel.
We have the ultimate.
Oh, do you have something to feel?
Yeah, Chris does. So for those of you who have never been here before, you may be thinking of leaving at this point.
Uh-oh. No, I've done something.
So who wants to start?
You do.
I do?
Yeah.
Okay. So this, I'm just going to go with the one that I was most excited about. I didn't know about this until like 2 days ago. Chris messaged me.
Ooh, that's a variant too.
And
yeah,
that's a
rare cover.
This book. So Gideon Falls, Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino and Dave Stewart. I didn't even know it was coming out. I read the description. I was so sold. So it deals with a man in a city who's obsessed with garbage. He goes through the garbage and he finds things like nails and pieces of wood and puts them in jars and dates them. So it cuts from that, and then him deep talking to a psychologist who's basically like, you are not doing well anymore. I may have you recommitted. And then his kind of like an internal thing where he's like, I can't tell her what I know because she'll think I'm nuts and I don't trust her, blah, blah, blah. Then there's a pre-Catholic priest who is being sent to this small town, Gideon Falls, because he's done something that has ostracized him from where he was previously stationed. I'm gonna guess. I know what that
the things
a
Catholic priest usually
yeah,
mean.
I mean.
But it seems like
it could be. It may maybe not. Actually, you know what? It probably isn't. It's probably something more like mysterious.
He basically got run out of his or kicked off or whatever that. Yeah, and he was teaching. He was teaching at the seminary for whatever reason, and they reassigned him.
That's right. So they send him to a small town. They're like, the priest there just died. His congregation needs a shepherd, and he doesn't want to go. He goes. And so it kind of weaves these two together, and it's really nice and cinematic. You get like shots of the one, and the dialogue or narration for the other will be over it. So visually, it's got a cool kind of cinematic thing like that. But then
it's very scratchy looking.
It's very scratchy looking, which I really like.
Mm-hmm. It almost reminds me of Witches.
Yes, it has a little bit of a quality. There's a couple books right now that have a similar art style. I can't think of.
It's very designed, like the pages are designed very well. This is, I think it's Andrea Sorrentino, if I'm not mistaken. Might be a guy.
They worked on Green Arrow together, which I never read the stuff.
Look at that. I mean, you can actually live in this book a little bit. Like it kind of draws you in and into the rooms and into the environment. It is grim. Andrea Sorrentino, yeah.
So Lemire says that like the thing that's going to end up tying these characters together is this place that appears in different places. It's called the Black Barn. We don't know what it is yet, but it's been known to appear like in the city where the garbage guy is, in the town where the priest is. It has a real weird fiction kind of feel to it, so I knew right away because that's kind of I'm into that like subgenre or whatever of literature, so I was excited for this, and it totally delivered. I read it today on lunch. It was fantastic. Back of it's great, because Lemire talks about how he's had some of these characters for over 20 years, and he talks about how he came up in like different iterations of trying to get this made, and it never happened. Mm-hmm. And it was cool. It was just really good.
Lemire, he grew up in the sort of backwoods of Canada, in a place called Hero County, which might have been his first series.
I think you might
There's
be right.
There's a big, fat thing we have called Hero County. And he can draw his own stories, but which, when he works with an artist, that makes it so he can actually tell a story that an artist can work with, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Rick Remender is the same way, where he used to be an artist and, gets all these amazing artists to work with. And while he can draw himself, but he knows how to best utilize the talents and powers of a comic artist. Yeah.
That's really good. I mean, it is interesting that
that's the smartest thing I'll say all night.
Lemire talks about growing up in like a rural area and then moving to the city for film school when he was 20 in like, I forget what it was, 96 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's like my age and... that's in the book too, the urban kind of rural juxtaposition. So I really enjoyed it. It sold out here, so thank you for the
sold
copy.
Out everywhere. Yeah,
I was messaging you repeatedly, like, did you get me a copy?
Yeah, that was the funny thing is I was just kind of scrolling through some shit online, and a little blurb popped up about it. I read it. And I'm like, dude, it sounds great. I'm like, oh, out tomorrow. So I'm like, hey, Mike, save me one, buddy. And I thought it'd be right up your alley. I mean, it sounded like like it could very well fit like in the Twin Peaks universe.
Yeah,
the description. And then you look at the name; it's like Twin Peaks, Gideon Falls.
She thought it was Gravity Falls.
I thought it was a cartoon.
What are your thoughts on it, Jordan?
I really loved it. The character designs are great, and I really want to know everything that's going on right now because
the girl
like
with the hook or the woman, with the hook,
old woman. The old woman.
Yeah.
It's great. I want to know how the old priest died. I want to know everything. I want to know, is this dude insane? Priest. Which it looks like he's not totally insane, but
that's what you
he's
got to
have something. But yeah.
The screws loose, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's wrong. Just
right.
Because you're paranoid, don't mean they're not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it. I'm hooked.
Cool.
Sell me some comics.
Who else? Yeah. Somebody hit me.
What?
Comic.
All right. This
Pony
is,
up, fucker.
This is one that actually, Sean turned me on to Punk's Not Dead, and this one here. Do you got it too? Can we do the
synchronized.
Ooh, fancy.
Okay, I'll do it.
So this one here, this is one of the. Was this like the first or one of the first from the new IDW imprints?
They had an anthology come out.
Black Crown.
I know.
That's why I said one of the first.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of their more for mature readers.
Is this Shelley Bond is the
well, like you pointed out with IDW.
Yeah, they're primarily a bunch of like licensed things. You know,
which isn't a bad thing.
A lot of Doctor Who.
Well, Shelley Bond used to be, and the like one of the main editors at Vertigo, who you know left, and now she has a home at IDW, and that's what the Black Crown thing is. So when they before they premiered, they sent me a nice little like care package with a USB thing that has a lot of their comics. And
that's cool.
Yeah, like neat little trinkets. So they're taking a very, I guess, unorthodox punk rock approach to making comics, kind of like Black Mask, and this is Black Crown.
Yeah.
David Barnett is the writer, and Martin Simmons with a D.
Simmons.
But yeah, what's really interesting with it is essentially it's about this kind of little loner, little British kid who becomes haunted by the ghost of Sid Vicious. They never outright say Sid Vicious. Yeah.
But it's Sid Vicious.
But they straight call him Sid, and it looks exactly like him.
He's a lot smarter than Sid Vicious
was. That's true.
I mean, maybe our ghosts are smarter than us.
Well, you got to figure, too, you know, he's had, what, 40 years?
To educate himself in heaven or hell?
Well, what? And
purgatory, brother.
He explains he's, like, been stuck in this airport
for
40 years
because
his mom had his ashes and she Heathrow.
Oh, that's true,
yeah.
He's I've been stuck in this fucking airport for 40 years.
Yeah, his mom tripped and dropped his ashes and he got sucked into the air conditioning. And, he's been trapped. And this kid comes into this airport for, you know, whatever reasons. And evidently he's the first and only living person who's seen him since he died. He's the only one who can see him. And, you know, from that point, he just latches on to him.
Yeah. Kind of well, and they don't even know why. Then at some point he's like, oh, wait, I'm out. Okay, cool. I guess I'm stuck with you and you're stuck with me.
Yeah, because originally he was trapped in the airport. He couldn't leave the airport.
So there's something about the kid that's special, too.
And all the while, there's a branch of, MI5?
Yeah.
That's basically, it's like their, you know, BPRD X-Files.
Yeah.
It's this one kind of old woman. And it's very mod, too.
She's an old mod. Yeah. They do the flashback.
Yeah, exactly. She looks like Emma Peel from...
Yes.
From the British Avengers. And then she gets assigned to her this little... kind of intern guy that she really doesn't want to deal with. It's a very promising
great artwork.
Great artwork.
Very Fraser Irving.
Nice colors. I mean, speaking of ghosts, and I'm not going to bring the show down, I promise, but
we're haunted.
My mom passed away like last month, right? And they always, like, people say, oh, you know, she'll always be watching, she'll always be with you. It's really fucking with my masturbation techniques. Because it's like, Mom, you know.
What, so like you're jerking off and the lamp falls
off? Well, it's like, oh, my mom's always watching me now. And it's like, fuck. So, and some of the other things I do, you know, but...
But
certainly, I hope she understands if she's watching.
I think if you've moved on to immaterial, I think that masturbation's probably...
In all honesty, she's probably dealt with a number of your crusty socks growing up. That
she's
she
probably
doesn't
like, wow,
anymore.
44 and still doing it. Go, son. I don't know. Anyway, just something I...
You can do it. I'm proud of you.
Something I thought of.
This is what we do here.
And what would she think of that joke?
Would
she should shake her head but still love you?
That wasn't a joke.
It wasn't.
Shake my hand.
Many crusty socks.
So, you know, one of the things about this book, I noticed right away, the kid that ends up seeing kind of like Sid's attached to him, he has an interesting relationship with his mom. They show him first he's getting beat up at school, but then the next scene him and his mom go on these like reality shows and
Jerry Springer
and like pretend to be, so they sell themselves as like, oh, you know, these shows, we need a mom whose son is gay but doesn't want to admit it, or we need whatever, and they go a circuit and do this stuff, and there's like, so he's been raised with a certain amount of this like deceit and
like
trickery.
They're grifters.
It's like Tyler Durden and his mom.
Yeah,
it totally reminded me. Or wait, not Tyler Durden, I'm sorry, Choke, the guy in Choke.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they like change the color of the hairspray. It was like domestic terror. Not, well, you can't really say that anymore, but I guess you could when Joe came out. But But it was interesting. So it reminded me a little bit of a Chuck Palahniuk story in that regard. But then the thing with the Cid ghost, it's not really Cid. So it's not a spoiler because the author talks about it at the end. He says, then there's Cid. We might think that as a ghost, Cid is the soul or spirit of someone who's passed over. But that's what he thinks. But it's more complicated than that. Cid is a spirit, but he's the spirit of 77, the spirit of punk rock. He's an entity that doesn't know what it really is. He's a collection of energy that is infused with the essence of punk. What's more essential to the core of punk than looking maybe just a little bit like someone who wants to look like a picture they once saw of Sid Vicious? He's an archetype, a spirit world amalgam, an unself-aware fiction suit. I mean, this is so Grant Morrison Invisibles right there, like the fiction suit stuff.
But it's all, and then right there, that's also their out for, you know, you can't sue us.
Yeah, right.
And plus, this, like, you know, no, it's an homage to a very similar type character.
We can read it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But great book, you know, and I'm really looking forward to issue two, and I'm really looking forward to if this kind of sets up what the caliber of things that Black Crown is going to be putting out, then I'm really looking forward to seeing what they have in store. Exactly.
I miss Vertigo, you know, I mean, I know they still
publish. Vertigo's still around.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, they still publish great stuff. They still publish great stuff, but I feel like I miss that, the Vertigo, like...
I feel like Vertigo, back in the day, they always had, like, one really great book, be it Sandman or Preacher or Why the Last Man.
What did you just say?
They always would have... I'm not saying I like Sandman.
Okay, I just was like, wait.
They always had a book that would, like, hook people in and,
what
like...
What did you do to Mike Willman?
Yeah, where is he now?
You don't like Sandman?
I like Sandman. I make Neil Gaiman jokes a lot. But anyway...
Neil Gaiman is a national treasure.
Yes,
that's not our nation, but...
But anyway, he is a national, one book that goes like 60 or 75 issues that like keeps people coming
their
to Vertigo.
Flagship title.
They have like five or six other books that kind of, you know, oh, you discovered this because I like Sandman, I saw an ad for it. They need that book.
Right now. I mean, they had a very coherent world with Sandman and Hellblazer and Books of Magic and Swamp Lucifer Thing. And Swamp Thing. So that's what I mean. That's that British New Wave...
Yeah,
generation of writers, and they kind of had this coherent scene within, and it's I mean, it's just not what they do anymore.
The Extraordinary Gentleman was originally on Vertigo.
No, it was ABC.
The first run was Vertigo.
Sure it wasn't. We have a science officer to fact check you.
You may be right. I don't think it was.
I don't think it was.
Beaver Vendetta was.
That wasn't actually.
Beaver Vendetta was first in Warrior.
They bought the rights
from a British thing.
Yeah,
but I'm pretty certain.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain.
Well,
I know.
That's why we have a science officer, dude.
Look that shit up, Juan.
Now it's published.
Anyway.
So, my turn speaking of British.
Your turn.
The Beef.
Ah.
By my good, dear friend Richard Starkings, who just wrapped up 80 issues of Elephant Man. Moved to Tennessee.
Oh, he moved to Tennessee?
He moved to Tennessee.
That's why I never see him here anymore.
And that's why this book is infested with rednecks.
Why the fuck?
No,
but he was working on this before he moved away. But now the Beef is sort of an old school Marvel origin story by way of Duck Dynasty. What, you smelling
me? That's pretty good.
No, he was checking the facts. The original publisher was ABC, then Wildstorm, then DC, then Top Shelf, and Knockabout Comics.
I'll never lie to you. Oh, there you go.
Well, no,
no,
thank you.
So the Beef.
Cheers, you proved me wrong. Come on.
Written by
Richard Starkings and Tyler Shaneline, and with art and colors by Shaky Kane, who I happen to really like his style.
Very straight lines for someone named Shaky, guys.
Yeah. I don't think it's his real name, but Shaky Kane did a really cool book about 10 years ago called Bulletproof Coffin.
There's an ad for it in the back. I always hear that reference,
you would
but I've never,
love it.
Really?
Okay. Oh, you would love it so much. You read it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, I mean, his art is so, like, kind of childlike and colorful, but it's also so very violent.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of some of the old cartoons from MTV
Liquid Television. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally.
A little Mike Allred, a little Jack Kirby.
A little Sick Sad World.
A little Sick Sad World. And so, yeah, I read this about 6 months ago, so I don't remember everything, but I remember it's a kid who grew up. His dad was in the meat industry. They kill cows. Richard is a vegetarian, so I knew going in this was not going to be a pro Beef comic.
It's not? I thought it was. No, I'm kidding.
In fact, there's the Surgeon's General warning. There is shit in your meat. which when I was in home in North Carolina, we wrote a song. Me and Duff wrote a song called "The Shit Is in the Meat."
Hey, fun fact about vegetables: you know what they used to grow them?
Fertilizer.
Shit. There's shit in everything.
Cycle of life, my friends. Cycle of life.
Yeah.
There's certainly shit in this show.
Fuck yeah, there is.
So, who else read? Did you read it?
I read this one. Yeah.
What'd you think?
Ugly, heavy-handed with the stereotypes. Definitely not meat eater friendly.
And you're a meat eater.
Oh, a huge meat eater. But okay, the story's not bad so far.
Yeah, continue with the premise, though. You know, you're gonna.
I don't know where we left off.
So it's like it's genetically modified meat, and it gets in the dude, and he turns into a living slab of meat. By the way, I was eating a steak when I read this.
Because he's been eating that stuff for like 40 years.
Yeah. Instead of turning into the Hulk, he turns into the beef.
Yeah, he's like a big slab of walk-in meat.
That was really what made me kind of hooked me a little bit, because, I mean, I liked it, but I also, and I'm a person, I have no problem with vegetarians. I wish I could be one. I can't. Like, I tried. It hasn't worked.
I would shrivel up and die. End of story.
But I didn't, it was heavy-handed, I feel like, with some, but I appreciated, my favorite part was, like, some of the factual stuff about, like, the biochemistry and
eating
and drinking
part.
This stuff. I thought the thing with the redneck heavy-handedness, now I understand, because he just moved to Tennessee, maybe.
He had written this before he moved.
It reminded me of the way Rob Zombie, when he always has these redneck characters, and he just repeatedly is like, oh, I don't think they get that they're white trash yet. We need to put in another scene of them being white. It's like, dude, we got it in the first 5 minutes. Move along.
But, oh, you grew up in Chicago.
I mean, I felt like...
Because I know people in North Carolina really, where it's like, you like what you just said. I get that you're white trash. You can stop now.
The characterizations... Yeah, the characterizations got in the way of the story a little bit. Now, okay. I don't think that'll last. I think this set it up and it'll go from here.
Right.
But there was a point where I was like, I get it. Like, I don't need all this dialogue proving to me that they're white trash.
Yeah, it's funny because we read like 5 or 6 comics last night, and for me, like this one, the characterization, like maybe I'm just old school, but I love those old school like Marvel comics from the 60s, the origin of the Hulk, where things are very broad strokey, yeah. You know.
And I mean, that may have been his attention too, since the rest of it is very like, you know.
Yeah. So it's like an old school 1960s.
Like a meta approach to writing. Yeah.
Marvel. That looks like Stan. Marvel comic.
Oh yeah, I thought that while reading it.
Did you?
Yeah.
So I recommend it. I almost do need things spelled out for me sometimes.
I don't think
I didn't understand anything I read in the one we talked about earlier.
Gideon Falls.
I just like the buildings. I was like, oh, this is cool. And I understood he was coming from somewhere. And I read this today, and that was great. We'll talk about that later.
That was great.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think you read it.
No, I did not. No,
I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
The next one.
Does Jordan have one?
Wait, Jordan? What? Jordan?
Huh, what?
You want to talk about anything?
Oh, about the beef? No.
No, I mean about any kind of
anything.
Oh, fuck. I don't know. I guess The Thing, because I remember that one more, because I read that one last.
Swamp Thing?
We don't have to talk about it right now.
Project into the microphone, doll.
Oh, my God. We can talk about that one later. I read all of Cal... No, I didn't. Oh, my God. I didn't read Cal Exit.
Talk about what you read.
All right, fine. The Swamp Thing. Let's see. The Swamp Thing helps a little boy through the snow, and they talk about football.
That's it.
Everyone in the audience is like, well, you lost a sale on that one.
I'm not a good salesperson at all.
I can relate.
Dumbledore's dead.
They do something really good with the little kid in the end, but it's once again Frankenstein's monster finds an innocent child.
Yeah,
I've read it before. I will read it again, but this, I have no qualms with this.
I think that Tom King, it seems like that's what he was doing exactly that, just a reiteration of it. I liked the way that it was told, not necessarily what was told.
I agree.
I didn't get the football stuff. I mean, we were kind of distracted.
Well, it intros it and outros it, right?
Yeah, but I didn't totally understand how it fit enmeshed with it, but I think I just missed something because we were talking while I was reading it, and I was like cutting away from it and going back to it.
Maybe, but the footballer blamed him sucking at the game on, like, it must have been a monster.
But, like, what did they have to do with the little boy in the
sport? Well, I think sports, when they say that he's a monster, like, when he's a monster and he's a football player, that's a compliment.
Maybe I need to watch more sports, but
maybe I shouldn't have had movies playing while we read comics.
But, you know, the back of this is, so there's two stories. The second one is the last script for a Swamp Thing story that Len Wein did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before he passed away, he's the creator, one of the two creators, and he didn't get a chance to actually like write the dialogue. So it's a script, and Kelly Jones, who I believe I've had some of his books on here before, like The Hammer, I love. But he's a very Bernie Wrightson influenced artist, and he did all the art for the story, and then Len never got to actually write the dialogue, so they just present it without dialogue.
But with the story afterwards, yeah.
But it was beautiful, and for like a last parting, you know, story for this character that he created, that's now archetypal. Like, I just thought it was a really good way to go out. So yeah. It was really cool.
I think Tom that's King is probably the best mainstream writer in comics right now.
That's
working for the big two. I think Tom King is probably the best writer in comics that's working for Marvel DC.
Does he write for Marvel too?
Well, I'm just saying, out of the big two.
Out of the big two,
sorry. He did. He wrote the Vision series.
Which everybody says is good, yeah.
Yeah, and he writes Mr. Miracle. He writes Batman. He does a really good job on Batman. He wrote that Batman annual you read.
Which was great. Well, we previously had that Batman Bugs Bunny book, which...
He wrote that, yeah.
You know, begrudgingly, by the end of the show, I was like, okay, you know, I mean...
That was a fun book.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's a really smart writer, and he's not like Grant Morrison smart, where he's like, let me show you how smart I am. He just does smart comics that, like, oh, wow, like, that's pretty fresh.
I read my comics with a thesaurus.
It feels very classic.
Yeah.
He's got a very classic approach, but without being, like, really beholden to, like, oh, he's doing the Jack Kirby, or, oh, he's doing the Stan Lee.
He can touch your feels, you know? Like, yeah. I mean, when the kid asked the Swamp Thing to be his dad because his dad died in the snow, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, poor little guy, and, you know, he's like, you wouldn't be a monster if you were my dad.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. I'm not going to cry in front of you guys tonight.
Yeah, so I don't want to give anything away, but I feel like the ending has been done before, and I'm not attacking it. I enjoyed reading it, but I feel like I've seen that in something.
Was it one of those books that you read the book, and then at the end of the book you're like, didn't I already read this like a couple years ago?
Yeah, I don't know. It's good, though. I recommend it. Kristen Perez super duper loves it, and she cried at the end.
Right? See you in where are we going to see you, Kristen?
Isn't it great to
see you at WonderCon? I'll see you there. See you around.
Piece of art make you cry. It's cool.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are. You tell her we are.
For me, it's Gilmore Girls every time, man. That episode where the with the chainsaw. Fuck.
Fucking Rory.
Every chainsaw.
Fucking Rory, dude. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Ash vs. Evil.
No. Doing the juggling the chainsaw and the.
The end of the video game, The Walking Dead season one, made me cry.
The video game?
There's a video game by Telltale Games. Before we realize that your choices don't matter, made me cry. You would have thought someone I loved died.
Wow. Hmm.
Somebody died on the show?
It's a video game, and it's not related to the show as far as characters go.
It's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure type
thing. No, I have the Guardians of the Galaxy
the ends
one.
Kind of end
I'll scene. Never get to the end because I'm Star-Lord, and I'm stuck in front of this door like 5 minutes into the game. Like, what the fuck do I do?
What, on Telltale? And you can't beat
fucking
it?
Fucking Google.
No, I can't.
But is it by Telltale?
It's like the opening.
I'm an idiot.
I will, because Telltale gives you everything. It's like you're playing through a movie. You don't do anything.
It's not like it's like 1985 where you have to call the hotline.
No, I'm like, what do I do?
You're not looking at something and clicking Y.
I just am not good at this.
That's why I don't play video games.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're good at life. I just don't think you're good.
Yeah,
not being good at video games does not equal not being good at life.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes being good at video games equals not being good at life.
Okay, well, now I know. That's not what my
and knowing is half the battle.
Yes.
I'm not saying across the board. I'm just saying.
All right, who's got a comic book? Let's talk about more. We read a lot of comics last night.
Did we?
Oh, yeah, we read that one.
I read half of that one, and I loved everything about that.
The half you read.
So, and I got distracted and needed to drink more wine and make more stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you sold it. I wasn't going to read this. I haven't read it yet, but you, like, give your...
Oblivion Song. So Oblivion Song, this is the new book by Robert Kirkman, you know, from The Walking Dead and...
Invincible.
Outcast.
Mm-hmm. Which...
Singular.
What?
Invincible.
There was more than one issue.
Well, when there were 144...
Fucking A, dude. So he wrote Invincibles. Just like you're The Walking Dead's.
Did he write Watchmen's?
Are you watching The Walking Dead's again?
Oh, Uncle Larry.
Give me another Miller's Light.
So, So this is his new book now that Invincible
Oblivion Songs is once issue two comes out.
Oblivion sang. That's good. That's the past tense. That's what happens when you... So basically, this is his new book, and the premise is a really fascinating premise. Essentially, it is 10 years after a national tragedy transpired, in which thousands of people lost their lives when a big chunk of... Was it Philadelphia? Right?
It was Philadelphia.
All of a sudden... poofed out of existence and was replaced by a big chunk of an alien planet, another dimension. They didn't really quite, you know, said what it is yet. A couple of years after the fact, they discovered that that this area, it didn't just poof out of existence. What happened was this location here actually traded places with the alien world. So this chunk of Philadelphia is now on this alien world. And it's basically
it's like that Eddie Murphy movie,
Golden Child.
No, Trading Places.
The weird Mars one.
Pluto Nash. Fucking hey, dude. So basically, it's about the main character Nathan Cole.
Nathan Drake.
So he is. So they found a way to travel between the two worlds. To basically try to find survivors, people who've been living in this hell on, you know, I don't want to say hell on Earth, it's not really Earth at this point.
Hell on Smurf.
Hell in Philly.
Trying to, rescue survivors and bring them back. And there's a whole bit in there with, you know, this big, you know, it's very like 9/11-ish of how the American people see this. So...
Or the Vietnam memorial is what it looks like, right?
Oh, there's a memorial on it?
There's a giant memorial, and every time he finds people and brings them back, he goes and he scratches their name off of the thing. Now, the government, they won't fund any more of his research to do this because they want to be done with it. They just say, you know what, fuck it, it happened, you know, it's not worth their resources. Mm. Maybe traversing between these two things is going to weaken stuff, and it's going to happen again on a bigger scale. We don't know. So he's going back and forth, and his main motivation is that his brother was one of the people that was lost.
Oh,
he doesn't know if it's his.
He didn't get that far.
If he lived, he didn't know if his brother died.
He just wants closure.
Exactly, he wants closure. So he's going back and trying to rescue everybody that he can. Now, what's really interesting is we see in here that there are some survivors, and they view him almost like the Richard Matheson novel, I Am Legend. They just know him as this kind of enigmatic figure who shows up, and he takes people, and they poof, they literally like just zap out of existence, you know, in front of their eyes. So they don't know what's going on.
They don't know he's saving people.
They don't know, as far as they know, he's killing them, he's doing this, he's doing that. And meanwhile, this whole other alien world is full of just giant Cloverfield-looking monsters and all kinds of just really
I love the artwork
things.
And the colors in it.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys mention the religious nut jobs?
In the book?
There are religious nut jobs who post...
In the book.
Okay. They post up by the memorial, and they're like, oh, God did this
that
for a
right.
reason.
Yeah,
and
the people coming back.
Don't trust the people
what
coming
kind
back.
Of deal oh, did yes. they make with
what
the
deal
devil?
Did they make with the devil?
Ooh, all that kind of
caught
stuff.
Something I missed.
So there really? Is... Oh, yeah. Yeah, so no, there is good. A whole... You know, there's a lot of different little things going on there, playing in the works. But so, you see these survivors here in the end who they witness him, you know, vanishing and, you know, snagging all these people, and they don't know what's going on. And they say, okay, well, you know what, we need to try to capture this guy to figure out what is happening. But it is very much an I Am Legend kind of vibe to it, you know, where, like, this person, you know, from our perspective, you know, he's going there and he's saving people from their perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, see that the two O's make an infinity kind of thing or whatever?
Well, it's like the two worlds cross.
Oh, I see what's going on there.
Oh, yeah, it's a Venn diagram.
Oh, okay.
More than the infinity
thank
symbol.
You. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me, Science Officer Jordan. So they did something really interesting in promoting this book where they sent us a trade paperback.
Really?
Of the first four issues. Yeah. Before we could even order number one.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wait, do you have all four? And can we read them? Oh, my God.
I don't know if we can let people read them.
No, not these people. Me.
I mean, oh, because you're like Cress.
Right? Yeah.
She's got clearance. She's a science officer.
I think if you ask Robert,
I got to make sure that the science is right.
Yes, maybe.
So, spoiler alert, everybody dies. Don't bother buying it.
But, he's got like 30 issues planned out. So, that's cool. And, like, with Walking Dead and a lot of stuff he does, like, and Invincible, I heard, had a very satisfying conclusion.
He's great at the long game, man.
Yeah, he knows where it's going.
I could never get into that other book.
I Invincible. Never read Invincible.
Yeah, I read the first, like, four issues.
Are you sure you weren't reading Invincibles?
I could have been. No. I read the first, like, four or five
issues.
It's
the yellow and blue dude. You know, he's actually the Image logo, right? Invincible, like, his costume is the Image logo. Yeah. Wow,
dude, what a way to kiss ass. Seriously. That's just like, I'm writing.
Like, this book has to be Image. It's the Image
logo. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the Incredibles, by the way.
Yeah.
But I love how the comic starts with us not in the know of what the fuck is happening.
Well, what you said, I remember you were thumbing through it and you're like, I don't know what's going on. It's just like 8 pages of just sound effects.
Yeah.
In the beginning, yeah.
It's like a manga. It starts with a whole little chase scene kind of going on. It's just lots of...
I had no idea what was happening, but I was still happy about it. And it's good.
I used to do adaptation work for Tokyo Pop. Back like 10 years ago.
I don't know what that means.
Like, so they would translate the books to English, but the people that translated didn't really know English. They knew English, but it would be very stiff.
They don't know syntax.
But I would love these issues where it'd be like 40 pages of oof, ah. You know, and I'd have to change an oof to an ah.
I was just gonna say,
just so I could feel like I was doing my job, you know.
People fucking paid you to do that shit.
They did $500 an issue, dude.
You'd be surprised, man.
That's probably why they went out of business. But
well, now
they're back in business.
Well, no, now they got fucking Google to just type that shit in. Didn't
it? No, that's a real work.
The fans will do it for free, though. That's how I watched my anime.
Oh, but shame on anyone that does that.
Taking my germs.
They say look at those fans
taking my germs.
I mean, not shame on the fans, but shame.
Shame
on any company that does it. That's like Neil Gaiman's wife, Amanda Palmer. Like, I don't want to pay a band, so I'm coming to your town. Who wants to volunteer to play drums?
If you pay for my Kickstarter, you can be my bass player.
Well, no. But yeah, pay people.
That's why I don't like
Neil Gaiman. Yeah, that's...
What?
Pay people. But if I can get stuff early and then buy it later, that's what I'm going to do.
I understand, but like,
man who would marry a horrible person like Amanda Palmer is a horrible man.
A lot of people marry a lot of horrible people, dude. And you need somebody to translate, don't be like, oh, you're a fan, you want to do it for free? Like,
oh, no, they're not asking anybody. Okay, I'm saying that the fans translate manga and stuff because it's not available in America yet. Okay, yeah, no, that's what I mean. Okay. And I'm pro that, and then you buy the manga when it comes out.
I want to do that and just, like, fuck it all up. I just want to make up my own shit and
There was the villain in Cyborg 009. Sure, and the villain in Cyborg, like 10 years ago, or maybe longer, because I would put George Bush quotes in as his dialogue. He'd be like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on, me. Won't get fooled again. And that was like...
Beat the new boss, same as the old boss.
Because, that's what I do.
Teenage waste.
Did they say nuclear?
Nuclear power.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was our super villain.
And he said, where wings take dream.
Is that what he said?
He said something. There's a quote about such and such and such and such, where dreams take wing. He fucked it up.
Where dreams take wing.
Where wings
take dream.
The Chinese singer lady. Wing.
Oh, no, her.
What's next?
No, she's great. South Park did an episode on her.
I'm going to spring one on you guys that we didn't do. I'm just going to do a quick plug for this. So we had Josh Finney and Kat Rocha on here.
About 2 years ago.
2 years ago or so. They are the lifeblood of 01 Publishing.
We've been around that long?
Yeah, we've been here 4 years, man.
Jesus Christ.
2018, wake up. Or actually, go
ahead.
Wake up, sheeple.
So they did Josh and Patrick McVoy, who's an awesome Lovecraft artist. I mean, he's an awesome artist, period, but he does a lot of Lovecraft work for, like, games and tabletop games, I guess, and stuff. They did this book, Case File Arkham, and it's a mashup of, like, crime noir and Lovecraft, and it was great. So this is the second one. I kickstarted this, like, I don't know, months ago, and I got it, like, maybe a month ago. Case File Arkham, Her Blood Runs Cold, another noir. It follows the same Hank Flynn PI. It's so good. Like, the way they take... you wouldn't necessarily... Once you get in there, you're like, of course noir would mash up with Lovecraft. It's like same time era and just similar, like a darkness and aesthetic. but they do it so well. And this one, even more, like, I feel like the way they're creating together as writer-artist is so... they've just, like... Again, this is a word I hate, but it's appropriate. Like, there's a synergy there. Like, so it just...
It's like, there's more than one artist who worked on it.
No, it's all Patrick. It's really good. I really, really like it.
I have the first one. I really enjoyed the first one. I had no idea that they had the...
this one's better. And they go more into...
I got the first one when they were on the show.
When they were here.
Yeah.
They're setting up a third book. And so you're getting more of this PI. Like, there's something going on with him. You're not really sure what, but there's something that...
Did they do it as a webcomic and then collect it or something?
No. They just made that. It's really good.
Did you have the first one here? I think
we did. Yeah.
The first one's on the show.
Yeah.
Cool.
Really good.
Nice. Okay.
So
came with a bookmark.
Yeah.
So you, and I guess you're on page one.
No, I finished it. I arbitrarily put the bookmark in. What else we got?
We got Cal Exit.
Cal Exit.
After fucking year.
No, it's been what, like 6 months?
Well, the first one came out after the election.
It's been about a year. The first one came out
that.
like 2 months before SDCC did.
I didn't realize that.
Which was what, July?
Okay, so we're not. It's not, dude. They're doing better than I am.
Yeah, but that's your model.
Yeah. Huh? But you said, but that's your model.
Oh, that's how.
You're self publishing. This is on.
I still didn't read
Black Man.
I've had it for like a
week. And it looks like it's like more than 22 pages. It's like
better than the
pages.
First one. Like the story, I felt like really ramped a bit. Okay. I really liked it. The first one I liked, but this one I like. It stayed with me for hours afterwards. It actually like elevated my mood. Like I felt like I was like, oh, this was like, it was good.
I'm excited then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to talk about it without, you know, I mean, so California's fragmented and it's this political landscape, not like kind of an extrapolation of where we are in that's pretty realistic a couple years down the road. And California's fragmented and there's different like allegiances and areas.
California,
that
essentially, we...
Parts of it want to secede and parts of it, government's trying to control that. And there's resistance fighters and I really liked it.
Do you think the first one did a good job, like setting up the second one? Like,
yes.
Okay.
Like this one, there's elements of it that like just really take off right out of.
I like that. There's a Wonder Woman cosplayer that is one of the Freedom Fighters.
Wait, there's a cosplay that's in the film.
Well, remember in the first
one, Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah.
Wonder Woman.
One of the main characters is a drug dealer, and his clients are both these.
Basically the stormtroopers.
The stormtroopers, but also the people that work in front of Man's Chinese Theater down there. And like,
so there's a lot of familiar territory.
It's very LA book.
Which is one of the reasons why I love it so much.
Yeah, it's cool.
As a matter of fact,
It kind of reminded me of like Inglourious Basterds a little bit, too. Like, that first scene with the...
Where the
Nazi guys coming into the house and... I mean, those are Republicans nowadays.
The Jew Hunter.
Oh, God. Anyway, I like how, at least in the first one, because I didn't read the second one yet, like, people are acting as if nothing is wrong, at least on Hollywood Boulevard with the tourism.
Yeah,
like we're still like, you know, this is fine.
Right, but if you peel it back a layer, you see all the shit that's actually, like, right there on top of them, but they're just ignoring it.
I mean, but that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I love it, because that's what people are going to do if it comes down to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Second issue of House of Waxworks came out.
That's mine.
It's the comic and the 7-inch vinyl soundtrack. Cheers. Which, some of the music for this one? Shaun Yasalt. I probably not saw.
From White Zombie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the tracks, or two of the tracks, are by her, so it was interesting.
Best and worst shows I've ever seen in my life.
I saw them twice back, and they were fantastic both times.
Oh, I saw them, they basically played to a fucking click track. Sucked ass. But the opening band was the Cramps, and that was fucking awesome.
Oh my God, that would have been an amazing show. Wow.
On Halloween night.
So she
night.
Did the music on that?
On one of the, it's like one or two of the tracks on the 7-inch. Cool. Yeah. Well, she just partnered with Waxworks at some point, and they released... She had like 200 copies of, I don't remember if it's Make Them Die Slowly. It's one of the early White Zombie albums that are actually terrible. Like, I remember back in the day when
I found
it. I was like, oh my God, I've never heard of this record. No, it's not. It's just really, like,
they were glam rock.
Yeah, they were glam rock.
Power metal?
Pantera, but not White Zombie.
White Zombie. I mean, they always had the same aesthetic. They just didn't quite, it wasn't quite there. Yeah. But so Waxworks released like 200 copies of whatever album, old album by them, that she's like probably had in her garage, right?
Oh, so he's put there was old.
And
old
so stock. I think that's where their relationship with her came from. And then okay. It probably like, you want to score one of these. So it was really cool. It's an anthology. It's two stories, just like the last one. I really dug it. And then today, actually, they released another thing, another comic with a 7-inch called Poser.
I don't know anything about it, but I'm going to order it. Yeah, I saw that going through my Instagram feed of House of Wax. And I screenshotted, so I remember that.
I mean, they're great. For those
people who don't know about House of Waxwork, you know, let them know what it is, what they're all about.
So Waxworks Records is kind of a boutique label that does mostly horror movie soundtrack reissues on vinyl. They're always beautiful pieces of vinyl, all, you know, multicolored, whatever. Great artwork. There's always bells and whistles thrown in, like a poster or, you know, whatever. And so they moved into comics about a year ago, and they're doing these comics where they give you a comic.
They're like kind of old school comics, too, like 70s comics.
Very. I mean, this is very Creepshow.
Yeah, it has a Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah,
it has
it's a very, very it's very entertaining. And they're standalone, at least thus far.
So, yes, little.
Oh, Donnie Cates wrote one.
They have the director is kind of their crypt keeper. He looks kind of like David Lynch if he had no skin on his face.
Actually, I think he looks like.
Let me see the cover.
No, that's not him.
That almost looks like the dude from the cowboy guy from the second.
Oh, that's just like David Lynch. Yeah. But I think that looks like John Carpenter or something.
Oh, dude, there you go.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Right, yeah.
See, I was going to say the cowboy from House 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Great fucking movie.
You guys bored out there? You guys doing all right? Everybody good? Cool, good. All right.
Well, somebody's going to get involved soon because we're going to do a Close Your Eyes and Feel This in a few
minutes.
Okay. Yes. I mean, we have a little comment here. Yeah, if you want to go back to the swamp thing real quick. Kristen Perez said that she read that this week, and she definitely wants to see where it goes, but wishes Kirkman would have given us something besides post-apocalyptic.
Oh, not you Swamp mean, Thing, Oblivion Song.
Oblivion Song.
Yes. And Kristen is one of the...
Oblivion? Oh.
Oblivion Song isn't
sorry,
post-apocalyptic.
She didn't name names, so...
Well, Kristen is one of the co-owners of Heidi Hill Comics. Let's give them a shout-out. Great store.
Santa Monica,
California.
Oblivion Song is not post-apocalyptic.
It's not. It is now.
I mean, it's this world that we live in.
Didn't you say it was kind of a 9/11 reflection, though? Which is, you know, 9/11 was an apocalypse.
Well, they had the Black Memorial Wall with names, so that was more Vietnam Memorial.
Well, I mean, it looks like it definitely has a memorial.
I mean, if you lived in the Twin Towers, it was pretty apocalyptic for you that day.
Fuck, dude. If I was a fucking kid in Sandy Hook, that'd be apocalyptic, dude. But I'm just saying, it's not a real apocalyptic thing. Post-apocalyptic, that's Mad Max. That's the wasteland. That's the whole fucking scorched earth, you know, fucking...
Yeah. Cal Exit is getting towards apocalyptic.
I think you're too insensitive. Because if you lived in like a 4-block radius... You lived in New York when that happened, didn't you?
Mm.
Did it feel post-apocalyptic?
That's interesting.
That's interesting.
The world had changed.
Yeah, I lived
That's
in the
not
West
what that
Village.
Means,
I
dude.
Lived about a mile from it. I lost a friend of 17 years.
Jesus.
Oh, way to bring was the show down, dude.
Yeah, I'm
just kidding. That is my fault.
I think it was post-apocalyptic. I didn't
okay.
think so.
So you agree with this asshole.
But it changed.
It's not post-apocalyptic.
Post-apocalyptic.
The man was there, for Christ's sake. Jesus. I know better. I saw it on TV.
Oh, God. So real quick, I was 11 years old and had no idea. I didn't understand the gravity of the situation at all. Jon Stewart was on TV crying about it, and that's when I realized this was a big fucking deal.
Jon Stewart cried about it.
Fucking Green Lantern.
On
sheds
a funny
tear.
Not that Jon Stewart.
But yeah, so moral of the story, you were there. I feel like if I was there, it looked post-apocalyptic to me. But I understand they didn't get nuked, but...
Well,
I mean,
technically, it could have led to that.
Dust, you could kind of say, look, now we're walking up.
Trains
weren't running for a while.
Yeah.
The area of the West Village was kind of closed off for a bit, where you had to prove that you lived in the West Village.
Whoa.
Yeah.
For like a day or two, so you could get back home.
And you lived there at that
time,
right?
In the West Village, too. I got into plenty of arguments with police officers over saying, I lived here for 10 years before it happened. I said, I don't have to show you my ID at all.
Whoa.
So it felt more like martial law than post-apocalyptic, let's say.
Oh, shit. Okay, and then Rick and Morty referenced that in season 3, episode 1.
Which really brought it home
for
you.
In a memory. No, he says, you can barely hear it, but he says they're going to use this to take away our freedoms. Like, weird shit all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we do Close Your Eyes and Feel This, I got one more book I want to talk about. I have two, but I got to reread the one, so I'm not going to talk about it. Jeff, that works here, turned me out of this. You guys know me. I like Batman, but I just don't read Batman because I feel like unless there's a creator that's going to work on it, like the last time I read it was Grant Morrison. I read that the whole time he wrote it. It was fantastic. But I don't need Batman on a monthly basis. Yeah. I need great Batman stories, but not Batman every month because it just becomes like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like start to finish Batman stories, yeah. Not this kind of, you know, just you're fucking.
Although that Tom King Batman is really good.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite ones.
It is. Which, it still is.
One of my favorite Batman stories, which I know you're going to love, is the Neil Gaiman, whatever happened to Kid Crusader.
We did it on here before. And that was like in the mid or near the end of the Morrison run. They did that as kind of like a.
As a coda. Like the Alan Moore, what happened to Man with Smiles.
So, Jeff brought it. He's like, oh, are you reading White Knight? I'm like, I don't know what that is. And he showed it to me. I'm like, oh, it's Batman. It's Sean Gordon Murphy writing and drawing it. Now, he did Punk Rock Jesus, which is, like, just amazing. He did The Wake with Scott Snyder. He did Joe the Barbarian with Grant Morrison. And he did, there's another one I'm totally missing that he did fairly recently. But so he's doing this, I think it's 8 issues. They're on 6. And the setup for this, it's not the regular DC universe, which is also a plus because we don't need to have baggage. And he kind of like jumbles some stuff around so it works better, I feel
like.
It's
almost like one of the Elseworlds.
Yeah, it's like an Elseworlds.
It's a little pocket universe story.
So the Joker ends up, like, it starts out with him and Batman and they're doing their thing. And then somebody gets footage on their phone of Batman basically beating the shit out of the Joker. And, like, it's in this pharmaceutical plant and he's shoving these pills down his throat, beating him, and then this goes viral, and then all these political commentary, and it doesn't lean either way, it's right down the middle, so that I like that right away.
He's leaning on
it. All these social justice warriors get on it and they're like, this is outrageous, he's a human being, and they start defending the Joker on social media and all that. I mean, it's so timely. And so what these pills have done, we don't know why yet, they've basically cured him. So he comes out of this as Jack Napier, and he's like, I know I've been a terrible person, but I want to use my insight to help things. And he starts this campaign where, like, first he discovers there's a $3 billion a year.
Can I just pause you real quick? When the parents watch the kids out of the bathroom and tell them to cover their ears, we are horrible, horrible people. We're not that bad. But go ahead.
It is
10:30.
So the social justice warriors are all over this, and then so he starts using this as like a Jack Napier starts using this as a political platform and saying, like, I know I did wrong, but I want to use this to help. He discovers that there's a $3 billion a year disaster relief fund that Gotham has for Batman because
he
starts spinning it where he's like, look, whenever he fights these people, he brings them to. Do they do it where the rich people live, where the 1% live? No, they go to Backport, where it's all the poor people, and they destroy shit there.
So you're telling me that Batman fights crime in Crime Alley,
yes,
and shit gets fucked up? He doesn't go to fucking the Upper West Side of Gotham?
It's really interesting, though.
Shit.
So then, like, there's 6 issues in. I was reading 5 earlier. I didn't make it 6. I'm behind, but... So now Napier's using this as a run for councilman, and there's this great moment where people are like, it's a Joker, nobody's gonna fucking vote for him, and I'm like, oh my god! Yeah. Like, the commentary is so, like, on the nose, but not. It's really great, but I want to know where it goes, and he's done these interesting things where they let him out of Arkham, and he looks normal, he goes back to Zoinko's joke shop, and Harley's there. And he calls her Puddin', and she smacks him. And then the real Harley Quinn shows up, and it turns out he plays this whole thing with the Harley Quinn. You know, she went from looking like the jester-looking Harley Quinn from the cartoon to looking to the sex pot one now, right? Well, he plays this as, like, it's not the same woman. The original one got fed up with him and left. And this one was, like, in a bank robbery that he was in and ended up being an accomplice, and he just basically at one point hands her the suit and starts calling her Harley. So
shit, I fucking like that.
It's brilliant.
I fucking like that.
It totally points out the fact that, like, yeah, you fundamentally change this character. Like,
they've never done her justice since the original. Anyway.
And there's a moment where the original one looks at the costume. Wait. She looks at the costume of the Suicide Squad Harley, and she's like, yeah, that's a real step for women's rights right
there. Fuck yeah, dude. Anyway.
Great. Wow, so yeah, that's the... So there's no catch in here,
volunteers,
guys.
So anyway.
Just choose a dude.
I think Gary needs to play. Because it's his first episode.
What are we pulling?
Be brave.
Waxwork, that's a...
If Chris takes his penis out, I'll say, what's your safe word?
Sea cucumber.
Cucumber.
So, okay, so Gary, what'll happen is you'll approach...
Here's three.
And then
he needs to sign the disclosure agreements
first.
There's
not a disclosure agreement. Watch. Like at some point in court, they'll be playing this back and they'll pause it after I say, there's not a disclosure agreement. Like, Mr. Baker, did you say that? Do you deny? We have you on camera.
So what's he
we're going to hand you four things, and then you just say which one you think is, you know. They may be of various. So actually, I'm going to ask you accept them with two hands. Okay. Because they may have, I just don't want you to drop one because Mike freaks out. Because
I hate it when cat shit falls on the floor.
Okay, so
you got to come up.
No.
What's your favorite?
Feels the best.
Your favorite. Yeah, you're not guessing yet.
So at this point, I'm just gonna say. Right. Mike, I'm going to hand these to you. You give them to him one at a time.
Okay, all right.
Give me my eyes?
Yep, close your eyes.
Mix that in.
Close your eyes and think about
it. Yeah, we'll do that
tomorrow.
One.
Oh, wait, that goes? I got to move the beer.
Yeah, no, that's,
hold on.
That's going to be the...
All right, Jesus Christ.
Yes, my son.
I can't believe they're doing this to you.
So that's A.
You move a lot of shit. You should move your shit, too.
Yeah.
All right, you like the feel of that?
Yeah, it's nice and cat. Nice right. Glosses. Nice
right, here we go.
Oh my god.
Good?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
That's option B. What feels better so far?
A.
A, okay, all right, cool. Here we go. Here's option C.
All right. A little sturdier paper.
That's what she said.
Okay.
You like that? Which one's the best so far?
I like C so far.
All right, ready?
Thicker,
here comes D.
Texture.
All right, here comes D.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, this man works out. This man works out.
Right. Is this like one of those like 70 years of Marvel? That's what it feels like.
It's the illustrated Bible.
This is nicely put together.
It is nicely bound.
See, I work in advertising, so I do paper all the time. Because I work in print.
You carry loads of it, apparently.
Yes, I do.
All right.
This is nice. This is a nice book.
So does that feel better than C?
Well, it's apples and oranges.
I was just going to say that.
It is, because it's nice cardstock, nice heavier cover. I like C as a regular monthly comic, because I like the texture, the thickness of the paper.
Can I tell you something, dude?
Open
32 pages of Guns Ablazing beats 1,000 pages of fucking Frank Miller.
Yeah.
In your face,
I have all
Frank.
Five of these. You know I blow
up. Yeah, you do.
You knew
that when you felt
stock.
Yeah.
I love the paper
stock
you use. Yeah, I really
That's our new plug on the back cover of issue 6.
Right.
Like, you know, spend $5 on this, you don't have to spend $100 on that.
This is nicely put together.
Oh, I did not spend $100 on
these are.
Sorry, weren't you supposed to talk about something?
For an independent book?
I talked about
it. I'll pay you later.
What did we talk about last time?
Yeah, I didn't bring it.
There's your space desk.
It's probably here somewhere.
You want to spell it?
I'm good. I got my...
By the way, this fucker is 12 pounds. Dude.
So bring us out on that. Tell us about that.
So this came out a couple of years ago, which we got to start doing a segment of just, you know, what dumb shit that Chris bought.
Okay.
You know, because hey, you know, I'll make a little theme song. We got to do a new segment called "What Dumb Shit Did Chris Buy This Time?"
This isn't dumb.
So this month, I picked up this, and it's Frank Miller's Big Damn Sin City. And that's it. It's fucking. It's every goddamn thing he did for Sin City. It is. Does it even say
1,000 pages at least?
1,354 pages.
You know, good for him for doing that much.
I agree.
What's the price point?
The price point. Well, what they have $100 is what they have listed on here. Huh?
Say it in pounds.
12.
No.
12 pounds.
Money pounds.
And
I want to make
well
a joke.
You want me to drop a conversion rate right now?
Yeah. Because I want to say it didn't weigh anywhere near that much.
100 pounds.
It didn't weigh anywhere near that much.
That was terrible.
I'm ripping off chicken, robot chicken. Shut up.
I know it's a good value for the money. Terrible.
So, from Drinking with Comics, that's it for tonight. Yeah. Thank you. Good night.
And good luck.